Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Que quiere marcharse de Semedo. Semedo de momento está enchufado. Ahora, justo lo digo, y justo se pierde. Ay, a punto ha estado de cometer penalti. Pepe, 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 gol de Nicolás Pepe. Pepe, Nicolás.
Is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. James, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm all right. Sun is shining here in Dublin. We've had a beautiful weekend. The weather's warm. The back garden was nice. I spent most of the weekend in the back garden cooking food and drinking wine and beer. So it's been pretty decent in terms of a weekend. How about you?
Yeah, pretty good week all around. It's sort of weird getting used to doing these in a world without games. Suddenly. There's been so many fixtures back to back to back to back to back, seemingly for years on end, that having a little bit of a gap, albeit until Euro 2020 lately starts, it's quite odd, isn't it?
It is, because, I mean, we had that gap last year when there was no football whatsoever, but for about the last 12 months or so, it's just been football all the time. I know he had some interlulls and things like that, but football was there. And now it's not. This is, I guess, a proper off season or close season, whatever you want to call it. And that, of course, is going to have an impact on the things that we can discuss. Lots of questions headed our way today. Lots of stuff about transfers. So we'll get into all of that, I'm sure. But yeah, it is a bit odd. But I mean, have you found, or how have you found the last week or so since the end of the season? Because I have to say, I don't know if a peace has come over me or if something has happened to me. Like, I feel a lot less stressed. And it's not that I was, like, really stressed out about Arsenal or whatever. I mean, I didn't enjoy the season. Nobody did. You know, it was vexing and frustrating and all of those things. But it does feel like a really long thing has just finally come to an end when it really should have come to an end a bit sooner, if that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, I think that's sort of natural. I mean, I think there are kind of, especially if you're sort of covering the games and writing about the games and tweeting about the games, there is a kind of associated stress that comes with that, because they're moments of high tension. You know, a team lineup comes out, everyone gets upset, and
mental. You
probably can't help be affected by that kind of craziness, you know. So the absence of that is good. What I would say is that the football that has been going on hasn't made me feel great either. Of course, we've had the two European finals, which for different reasons had kind of interesting reflections and ramifications for us as Arsenal fans.
Well, where do you want to start? Obviously with the Europa League final?
Let's start with Unai's the inevitability of Unai's triumph in that competition.
Isn't it just the most frustrating thing of all time that this man wins the Europa League wherever he goes?
Yeah.
Like, he could take over, like I said in the blog, he could take over a team in the Spanish 19th division, and somehow, within 2 years, they'd be in the Europa League final, and there's Unai Emery with the trophy in his hands. But the one place he couldn't do it was at Arsenal. I saw a lot of, like, oh, we sacked the wrong man, or we were wrong to sack him. I was like, oh, come on. There were good reasons why that happened. Yeah. And I was happy for Villarreal. And look, I don't have anything against Unai Emery personally. I'm happy enough for him. But I did find it annoying, even though it was really hilarious at the same time because Man United lost.
I mean, it was definitely the lesser of two evils in that respect.
Yeah, for sure.
I really didn't want United to win that competition. Solskjaer, I think, still hasn't won a piece of silverware in his time at United. He's got close a number of times. Usually only gets to the semi-final. This time went to the final.
How long has he been there now?
I don't know. It feels like a while. It's got to be a few years. And also Villarreal were kind of the underdogs, weren't they? I mean, no one was really backing them before the game, as far as I could see. Everyone thought it would be too tall an order. So I was pleased for them. I mean, there's some amazing scenes from their celebrations. And for a club that size to win a European trophy.
Oh, incredible, yeah.
It is a pretty extraordinary feat. You make a good point about Emery. He seems to win it everywhere he goes except to Arsenal. Mm. In fairness, he got at least to the final. I mean...
Yeah, but we got pumped. We got absolutely pumped 4-1 by Chelsea.
Yeah, yeah. I always forget that we scored in that game. I expected you to say 4-0 there, but we scored a really good goal, didn't we? A horrible consolation at the end, Alex Iwobi. Yeah. Yes, we did get pumped. He was, I think you can't sort of kind of retrospectively say, oh, we should have kept Unai Emery. You know, a lot was going on, particularly in the Premier League, that kind of demanded that attention was, that situation was attended to. But it is interesting that, you know, he seems to succeed in that role everywhere else and didn't at Arsenal. I do think as much as he was problematic at Arsenal, I don't think he was the only problem.
Oh, no. There was a lot going on around him. You know, there was a lot, you know, behind the scenes that sort of, yeah, led to a kind of instability that wasn't helpful for him as a coach and, you know, for us as a team and all of that kind of stuff as well, you know, so...
But anyway, at least an English team didn't win it, which we were not presented with as an option for the Champions League final.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't watch it. I watched about 10 minutes of the first half.
Right. At 0-0?
Yeah, and then it went 1-0. I watched the bit where Chelsea scored, so... but then I couldn't... on the possibility that Chelsea might win. I could easily, much more easily, compartmentalise Man City winning it than Chelsea. Maybe it's the London rival thing. I rationally understand
that.
Yeah.
I completely rationally understand that. In the watching of it, I realised that my distaste for Manchester City is actually quite substantial, to the point where sort of neither outcome became ideal. I suddenly felt like it would be so hollow for Manchester City to win it. But that would be the appeal, I guess, too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue as well that is it hollow for Chelsea? If it's hollow for Man City because of the way they're financed, etc., etc., you know, but is that not us as fans of clubs which haven't won it or haven't won
it? Sour grapes.
You know, is it sour grapes? Is it simply a case that, well, that's the reality of football right now and, you know, it might feel hollow to us and we're just making that excuse to make ourselves feel better because we haven't won it and aren't looking like we're going to win it anytime soon. I mean, we've got to be in it first.
A start. I think that's a good point. I mean, the interesting thing about Chelsea winning, and it's something that's obviously been discussed subsequently on social media, is that their model is so much one of kind of continual change, you know, blowing things up and starting again at the first sign of trouble, you know, sacking managers maybe earlier than some anticipate and bringing other people in. And it does seem to engender for that club anyway a kind of success.
Yeah.
And naturally people will hold that up in opposition to Arsenal, particularly at the moment where they're kind of erring on the side of stability. I think they're different contexts.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the Chelsea can operate like that because they can afford to operate like that. You know what I mean? And look, I say this and we have billionaire owners, so I know people will be shouting at that. But that is the way that they operate. They can just sack managers, pay them off, sign a whole load of new players, you know, spend a fortune on some of the best attacking talent in Europe and then go on and win a European trophy. You know, so they can really afford to do that and to operate in that way. And because of the way we're run, we can't. We can't operate in that same way. But I do think, you know, that there are perhaps not lessons to be learned, but I think you can look at, you can't, how will I put this? A winning culture can be instilled at a football club in ways that don't require tens and tens of millions of pounds every 6 months or whatever. You know what I mean? Like you can be or have a winning culture if you really want to. You may not be as good at it, or it may not be as easy if you don't have all that money to spend. But, you know, you can operate in a way which is smart and intelligent and gets the best out of your resources and maximizes the budget that you have. And, you know, even stuff like dealing with players differently. How long have we been saying that, you know, from an Arsenal perspective, we are so slow to make decisions on players that in the end cost us a load of money because they either leave for much less than they were worth or they leave for free because they can't, they're going to sit out the final year of their contract. All of the resources and money that we have squandered because there isn't quite that leadership at the top. You know, the demanding nature of you have to succeed with what we give you, and if you don't succeed, you know, we make obstacles for ourselves in the way that we operate, you know? Do you think that's fair to say that you can be about winning without being absolutely bankrolled by an oligarch or a nation state or whatever it might be?
I'm sure that is the case. I do think it's harder, you know, ultimately. If Abramovich says it's success or nothing, he's given a lot more leverage there by the fact that he's gone out and bought the players. You know, he has spent the money required to kind of make that demand. I'm not sure you can give someone, and I'm plucking this figure from nowhere, but like a transfer budget of, you know, 50 million quid and say, you got to win the Champions League. Sure. But I think it's all relative. You can still have expectations against your level of investment. And clearly, you know, Chelsea have created that kind of top-down culture of ambition and success. And, you know, it's a kind of slightly dull point, but not every player in that Chelsea team is wildly expensive. You know, there are some that are, but there are plenty that aren't. For every, you know, Kai Havertz, there's a Cesar Azpilicueta. You know, if you recruit well, you can still bridge that gap a bit. But yeah, it's illustrative of a club that from the very, very top is about winning and about success. And of course, Stan Kroenke famously said, you know, you'd get, or infamously said, you'd be crazy to get into football to win, to win trophies. Because I guess he saw that as, you know, throwing money after the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, the thing that the Kroenkes always say is that, I mean, they say it in the when they took over the club, right? 100% in the document, you know, they laid out the ambitions of the football club was to be competitive, to win the Premier League, to win the biggest trophies in the game. And they don't say it very often, but that is what they have laid out as their ambitions for Arsenal. And, well, here we are, you know, so it's difficult to marry what they say with the way that they operate because, you know, you could say, well, I guess maybe the man who was responsible for something like William Saliba is gone, right? But as an example, can a football club like Arsenal spend £28 million on an 18-year-old who 2 years down the line has yet to make a single appearance for the club? Is that the best way to use your resources? You know what I mean? And then you say, well, if it's not, who is accountable for that? And, you know, how do we, you know, how do we hold somebody responsible for that sort of money? You know, it's, yeah, I guess it comes down to if the
accountability,
and like who is ultimately looking at what goes on and saying, well, that's not good enough, that's good enough, you know, that has to change, this has to stop. Mm. Like, I know this might sound a little bit weird, but it sounds a little bit, you know, from what we know and from what he's sort of hinted at a little bit, that the person who's doing that is Mikel Arteta. And then, you know, given some of the things that have gone on and, you know, the players that have left and things he said about internal workings and all of that kind of stuff. And the other part of that is, like, should he be that guy? You know, should he not have more focus on managing the team or coaching the team, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, I think, a big debate. And obviously, as we enter the summer, Arteta's going to have a big role to play in the recruitment decisions that are made.
Yeah.
I guess at Arsenal, the problem is sometimes it feels like you can live by the sword without necessarily dying by it. You know, there's you're granted authority without repercussion. And that is all about oversight and, you know, to what extent. I mean, I'm sure Abramovich isn't absolutely aware of every decision and the mechanics of it that is made at Chelsea. But I'm sure in, you know, for example, I think her name's Marina Gravskaya or Bruce Buck or whoever it might be, he has people who at least are relaying that information to him very closely, very frequently, that ensure, or that he trusts, basically, to make those calls. Petr Cech as well is the, in there now as a kind of football executive. So
with his helmet on in the board meetings.
Yeah. I heard an interesting tidbit, actually, about Petr Cech. In that he was involved in the planning for Chelsea's final preparations, and he made sure they flew to the game as late in the day as possible. And apparently his experiences in Baku were a big influence in that, because Arsenal travelled to Baku quite early, did a number of days training in Baku, stuck in a hotel. The players, by the time the final came around, were pretty bored and pretty grumpy. And he basically determined he didn't want to experience anything like that again. So they flew out there pretty late in the day. I think it was the day before.
Right.
And a very different outcome. I mean, you know, who knows how important that stuff is.
But sure.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
So, that was the painful week of European finals.
Thank God they're over.
Thank God they're over. And I also watched the championship playoff final. I don't know if you saw any of that.
I didn't. No, this
the
was
goalkeeper
Brentford.
Off.
Yeah, the goalkeeper off. Yeah. Am I right in thinking? I think I read a report that one of the goalkeepers made a big mistake.
Yes, sent off. No, not sent off. Gave away a penalty. Sorry, Freddie Woodman. Very rash early on. Raced out of his goal. Brought a guy down. Spot kick, and ultimately that was pretty crucial in the game. He's had a really good season. He's on loan there from Newcastle. Arsenal have tracked him for a long time. I think he's had more clean sheets than any other player in the Championship this season. Something mad, like 20 clean sheets for Swansea.
Wow.
He's homegrown, obviously, which is a big criteria for what Arsenal want in their number two. It's one of the things that counts against Matt Ryan. But he had a little bit of an impetuous performance. The fact he plays for Newcastle is, I guess, potentially interesting. I mean, swap deals very rarely actually happen, but potentially maybe there are ingredients there with Joe Willock and him. David Raya, obviously promoted with Brentford, he had a minimum fee release clause, depending on, you know, them going up. So now that they have gone up, that becomes invalid. So the likelihood is, I think, that he will remain at Brentford. I think you're pretty relaxed about that, though.
Yeah, I'm not that worried, you know. Based on the goalkeeping coach's previous recommendation, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine without David Raya. If that's the guy that he's suggesting, I don't think you get two goes at that. And I don't know why. You know, maybe it was just the chaotic circumstances of last summer where they had to find somebody after selling Emi Martinez. But he didn't cover himself in any kind of glory there. So, I mean, how serious do you think the Arsenal goalkeeping search is? I know you did a big piece in The Athletic about transfers and all that kind of stuff, but are we looking for a number two, or potentially are we looking for more than that?
I think potentially more, certainly potentially more. And actually, I think there's a bit of, part of the reason there's not been more progress with it is that there's a bit of uncertainty. They don't know if they need a definitive number two. Do they need someone who is a number two, who could be a number one, you know, sooner rather than later? Do they need two goalkeepers? I mean, there is concern that Bernd Leno wants out. And I think, from the way I understand it, even if there are some reservations about Leno, given the scale of the work Arsenal have to undertake in this window, losing a first-choice goalkeeper like that would be unhelpful. I mean, when you lay it out, what they're trying to do, it's a huge amount of work and probably quite unrealistic that they'll do it all. So having to add more names to that list, more positions, would be a real pain. I kind of think, irrespective of what you think of Leno, I sort of think him going would be a bit of a spanner in the works, to be honest.
I think he's quite low down our list of things to worry about when it comes to transfer business and everything else. So, I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because we're at that two-year stage with Bernd Leno. He's got 2 years left on his contract. You know, when are we going to start operating in a way which, like we said, or like I said earlier, maximizes the resources that we have available to us? You know, is it a case that, okay, we could cash in now, but who can we spend that money on? Who's available, et cetera, et cetera? Or is Leno with us next season more valuable than the lack of, or what that might mean for his transfer price in 12 months' time? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, well, he's at the point where he needs to sort of sign an extension, really. If he's wavering on that, which seems to be the indication, or sort of unwilling to do that, it puts Arsenal in a problematic position. I mean, yeah, there'll be people who say Leno had a really dodgy second half to the season, you know, maybe let him go. It's just tricky. It just leaves you with a lot to do, you know. I think what would you if Leno was hesitating on signing a new contract, what would you do?
I think what I would do this summer, given everything else that's going on, is sort out the things which are more important. And to me, that's central midfield. It's right back. It's an attacking midfielder, creative midfielder, and
maybe a left back.
Maybe a left back. Which is a really difficult one. Apologies, I can't remember the guy's name, and it's too far down my list of mentions now, but there was a Celtic fan talking to me on Twitter last week at one point, and just the concept of a backup to Kieran Tierney and how difficult it is. Because when he's fit, he is a first name on the team sheet player, and he is so good, he becomes fundamental to your team and how you play. So you have the problem, A, who comes in to understudy that? Someone good? Someone ambitious? Maybe not. And then if you don't have someone good, the drop-off that you experience when Tierney is not available is quite severe. You know, the quality gap between your options is really big. So Tierney being good is great, but it's also, not that it's a problem, but it presents a challenge when you are trying to recruit a left back to ostensibly come into the club as backup for Kieran Tierney. Because a young guy is not going to play, and an old guy might not be that good, and everyone would go, oh God, we're signing another old guy, which I get, but that's a difficult one for me.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say is, I mean, maybe it'd be different without European football, but as much as we all love Kieran Tierney, it's probably fair to say, based on his career history, he's not going to play every game. You know, I mean, it would be a surprise if he played 38 league games, I think, given some of the injuries he's suffered, given his style of play. So I think there is potentially an opportunity there. I mean, that makes it all the more imperative you've got someone, right? Like, if you lose him and he's so important to your style, I think the issue we're having as well is not just that we miss Tierney when he's out. It's that we don't really even have kind of someone who's as good at doing that on the right-hand side. So it's not even like we can pivot, you know, and
I know what you
and
mean.
Attack down that flank. It's just kind of a bit of a dead end when we lose him. So that would definitely be on my list. It's on Arsenal's list. Central midfield, yes. Number 10, yes. I think, you know, we know the names in that position, Odegaard and potentially Ben Dear. And then the other fascinating one is centre-back, which just keeps coming up.
Yeah. Know? What do you make of that? I mean, it leads me to think that there's something about the Saliba situation that we aren't quite aware of, or that there's an opinion held on Saliba which doesn't tally with the expectation that many Arsenal fans have of him being a part of the first team next season.
Yeah, and I come down on the latter part of that. I think that, it was quite clear last summer that the manager wasn't convinced about the player, and maybe not enough has changed in, you know, the 12 months since then, or the 6 months since his loan spell, because I continually hear the names of centre-halves who cost a lot of money being linked with Arsenal, generally right-footers. You know, you just think that doesn't look great for Saliba. And, you know, Arteta's been really clear. He's going to come back. He's going to train with us in pre-season. But I felt like he never offered a clarity of he will be with us playing games next season. I think it was always very much like, yeah, he'll come back and we'll have a look at him. And certainly that's from his side. You know, they're under the impression, well, we'll definitely be joining up with Arsenal for training. Maybe it's the cynic in me, but he joined up with Arsenal for training last summer and it didn't work out great. And I am fearful, because I want Saliba to be part of the squad. Yeah. I'm fearful that he may not be, you know, as prominent in the plans.
Yeah, I mean, last season, I think we have to put into a little bit of context in that his season finished in March because football shut down and he'd had some injuries. And then there was the complete shutdown. He was training with us. There was Project Restart. He couldn't play in that. There was the issue over, you know, playing in the cup final in France. You know, so he'd basically gone 6 months after an injury hit season without playing, which is why I always felt like a loan wasn't a bad idea. I never really had any objection to the loan itself. I had some issues, as I think most people do, with the way we wasted 3 or 4 months of his Arsenal career, or his career in general, you know, that could have been either playing in the Europa League for us against teams that he would have been more than capable of playing against, or he would have been on loan with Saint-Étienne or somebody else in France for the duration of the season, which I think would obviously have been beneficial to him. That 3-4 month period obviously was a disaster, where I think it's led to a strained relationship between him and the club. I think, you don't even have to read between the lines. He gave about 5 interviews in a week on his arrival in France to talk about how unhappy he was about it, you know? So there is that context to it. But, yeah, the fact that Arsenal are actively and openly looking for a right-sided centre-half, it seems, when we have this £28 million player on our books already. Yeah, I mean, you can only really draw one conclusion from that, and that is not necessarily that Saliba's finished at Arsenal or that he won't be given a chance, but that there are some very serious doubts about him.
Yeah, they can't be convinced, can they?
Yeah.
I mean, listen, and it doesn't preclude him coming back and looking $1 million and Arteta. You know, we've seen him have this kind of attitude seemingly to certain players. I'm thinking of Nicola Pepe, who it just felt like he was never going to be convinced by. And that has changed based on the player's performances and based on his commitment and his attitude.
Mm.
I don't rule out that happening with Saliba, but I just don't think, you know, you're talking about people like Koundé, Tapsoba, like 40, £50 million centre-halves, if you really think you've got the real deal in William Saliba. So, yeah, it's a really strange one. It is a strange one.
Is that not, people would argue and say, well, this is the job of a manager and of a coach, like to sort of get what we paid for out of this player.
Like, well, Chelsea's a great example in that respect. I mean, one of the issues for Lampard, I think, is that he couldn't get Tune out of Havertz at all, and he wasn't using him. And, you know, Tuchel's come in and he's got a couple of £8 million strikers there, whatever it is, in Werner and Havertz, and, you know, he's managed to at least get some football out of them and make them look a bit better. And I think when you hire a manager, it's tempting for a manager to be like, well, they weren't my signing. You know, it's not my player, ultimately. I didn't make the technical choice on this player. But I think you're right. The other way of looking at it is, well, the club have invested in this player. I mean, was Edu there when Saliba was signed?
I think he had just come about in that summer, hadn't he? Because that was the summer, what was it, summer 2019? 18 or 19?
Oh, 19, you're right. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, so he had just arrived. It was the summer we bought
Pepe. And yeah.
So it was kind of the summer where he got a free hit. You know, he wasn't too involved in the plans, but he was there. He was part of those conversations and part of that decision-making process. So you'd like to think he would take a degree of ownership of it too. I know Sanier is gone. I know Hasfami is gone. But there are people who were at the club then who were party to those talks.
Yeah. I mean, would the owners be within their rights to turn around to Mikel Arteta and say, well, look, you can want this £40 million centre-half all you want, but you've got a £28 million, nearly £30 million central defender that we got. So you're going to have to use him. Or if you want this £40 million centre-half, you don't have the money for an Odegaard or a Buendia. You know, I'm not saying that that's what they should do, but wouldn't that be a reasonable conversation?
Yeah, and I don't think they have the money to do all the things they want anyway, unless they get really fortunate with kind of the sales that they make.
I'm curious as to what you... Sorry for interrupting you, I apologise.
No.
I'm curious as to what you think the summer is going to be like from a financial perspective, because we heard about Arsenal taking a loan. We know that the Bank of England loan, it was repaid, and apparently they've taken Barclays, another loan now from Barclays. And it is, I suppose, at this moment in time, relatively cheap, in inverted commas, to borrow money.
Sure.
So people will say, you know, the owners, they're billionaires, they're going to put in money, they could, you know, invest in the club. I don't think that's what they're going to do. I think if there are funds being made available to Mikel Arteta, that they will come from this kind of financing arrangement. And it won't be a gift. It won't be a present, a bag of money from Uncle Stan and Cousin Josh. You know, this will be a loan that the club has to service.
Yes,
so do you think that is what we're looking at in terms of financing the transfers that we're going to do this summer? And does it also not make the need to generate as much money as possible by sales important? It's not quite you have to sell in order to buy, but you have to sell in order to pay off or service that loan, which is basically going to be club debt.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about interest rates being kind of an all-time low for now, and probably it's not as punishing as some of the loans this club has taken in previous years, say, for example, to pay for the stadium or whatever it might be. In fact, almost certainly not as punishing. But I do think it creates a bit of an imperative. I mean, effectively, it will be debt. And, you know, it will need to be met at some point. I think the indications from the club are that they are able to spend without selling. Like you say, it's not a case of you need to sell to buy. But I think you make a good point. It might be a case of you need to sell to pay back what you've spent at some point down the line.
Buy more. You know, if you can spend X amount, but if you generate more money, then you've got a little bit more money to spend.
Yeah. And you know, that's one of the great uncertainties about this window is, like, no one can say for sure who's going to go, because no one can say for sure whether there are buyers for people. I mean, the case of Hector Bellerin's an interesting one. There's been a lot of talk this week about Real Betis, but are they realistically going to come up with the kind of money that Arsenal would want for Hector Bellerin? I think that's debatable, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's, I think, a bit of a trend across what we're seeing generally. I mean, I've seen a few people complaining that the prices we're seeing against some of our players feel a bit low. Maybe that's just reflective of a slightly depressed market. I would imagine it probably is. And hopefully that would mean that when we're buying players, we're also sort of getting the same kind of
discount. Works both ways, yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting, certainly, you know, that we can all list players who would be available, but finding a club who would want them and want them at the right price, I think it's harder.
Yeah, it's, you see all these kind of posts all the time, don't you? Like a list of players with a figure beside the name, and this is what people think we can get.
This is how
this
we
player.
Should do our rebuild.
This is exactly
sell these 11 players
and get in the 412 million for those players, and then we go and we spend blah blah blah. You know, I'm really curious to see what way the market operates this summer, you know, because football and football clubs have been badly, badly hit by the lack of fans and the financial impact of the pandemic and everything else. And look, thankfully, it seems as if there's going to be, or there is light at the end of the tunnel. And from next season, stadiums can be at least something approaching full and clubs can generate that revenue and what have you. But it's going to be really interesting to see who is willing to spend, because there are clubs that it doesn't impact, you know, City and Chelsea and maybe even Man United to an extent. When you see, I saw something at the weekend about who they were planning to buy. I can't remember. There was like four names. One of them was Harry Kane. I think another was Jadon Sancho. And there were another.
Yeah.
There was another two. And I was like, what the like, did they, I don't know. Do they have a fucking printing press out the back? They're just going to print their own cash?
Possibly. You know. Very possibly.
But you're looking at minimum for the four players that they were trying to buy, you're probably looking at 400 million worth of transfers. Like, is that what the Glazers are going to do to win back the hearts and minds of the United fans? You know, it's just so, it's so fascinating to see who spends. And, it won't be so much about what these big clubs spend, but what the kind of second, third tier clubs are willing and able to spend. Because, let's be honest, many of the players that we're trying to shift are only going to be of interest to those clubs. So it doesn't matter what City spend, because they're not going to be buying any of, well, certainly none of the ones we want to sell anyway. They might come at you for one of your young talents, at which point you have to run screaming. But you know what I mean? If you're thinking about Lacazette, Xhaka, Elneny, Bellerin, Cedric, Willian, all these guys who we would be, you know, willing to move on to generate funds, and people can have their own personal happiness index on each one of those signings, you know, the big clubs with the big money aren't going to be the ones buying them.
No. No, it is going to be the Betises and others, you know. I mean, there's been talk this week about Roma and Granit Xhaka. I don't know if you've seen that, but
yeah.
They seem to be very interested in him. I forget the exact fee quoted. I think it was either 20 or 25 million euros. Again, not a ton of money, but in this market, probably useful to Arsenal.
Yeah, on the Discord, Gagan J, or as you would call him, Georgahan J, said, what is an acceptable price for Granit Xhaka, assuming you would sell him? Would you sell him?
I think I would. It's not a decision I make lightly, though. I think it's a complex one, but I think I would. Yeah, I think you have to refresh and renew your squad and at the end of a season that we're all agreed has been a tremendous disappointment. Mm. Even though, bizarrely, he has probably been one of our better players within that, why not kind of blow it up and take it apart?
Yeah. I would too. If the money was right, I would sell. I think we have to, if we're going to rebuild, start to be ruthless is the wrong way to look at it. But, like, how can you properly rebuild with all of the same pieces? Or pieces that have been fundamental to this, these last few seasons, you know, who we know what they are, we know what they can give us, and what it is something between sixth and ninth, you know?
So, yeah, we have to do something different.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so he's got 2 years left. Are we going to extend? If we're not going to extend, sell when his value is pretty much at its highest, because when he's 29 with a year left on his contract, we're into that same fucking scenario that we have experienced time and time and time again, and we need to get ourselves out of it. And that might mean selling a player who you could make a very good case for to be part of the squad next season, who could be a useful member of the squad next season. You know, I know he had those Burnley moments this season, but like you, I agree, he's been pretty good. So I can see that side of it. But at what point do we start doing things differently with different people to try and bring about a different outcome? So for me, you know, it makes sense. It makes sense to sell.
Yeah, and it does seem to be going that way. And again, I'm sort of, although I'm a little bit nervous about losing a player who it feels like his teammates are sometimes quite dependent on, I also am encouraged by it because it at least indicates a bit of a shift in policy. You know, I know previously what we would do in this situation, and that's allow him to stay even though he's not really expressed a desire to sign a new contract, see his value diminish, and ultimately perhaps risk losing him for nothing. And that's the last thing we want.
Can I ask you why you feel like a little bit nervous about it? Is it because simply because of his stature, I guess, in the squad as an experienced player? And as, you know, I think you're right to point out that many of his teammates, you know, think very highly of in terms of his personality and what he brings and his, you know, most of the time, his professionalism. You know, there's a reason why Wenger picked him all the time, Arteta picks him all the time, Emery picked him all the time, and Mourinho, you know, for all his evil, and God damn, it's a lot of evil, you know, he wants him. You know, these are experienced managers who can see what a player can bring. Is it that, or is part of it maybe a lack of trust
in how he'll be replaced,
in how he might be replaced, and with who, by who?
I think it's a little from column A and a lot from column B. You know, if we had a really effective, proven recruitment department that, you know, were making a good job of replacing key players on a regular basis, I mean, if Arsene Wenger was at the helm, I'd be less worried, you know, because he always had a great eye and a great sense for when certain players' time was coming to a close. He anticipated it often. Sometimes felt he did it too early, but it meant that he was always in a good position to recoup some money and bring the next guy in. I'm not sure I have the same faith that we're going to kind of uncover the next heart of our midfield.
That is another aspect to this summer, which is going to be really interesting, because it is, or will give us a real indication of the efficacy and the talent spotting of this recruitment team. Because we can look at last summer and talk about all the reasons why it was difficult for every club. And those are very valid reasons. I know it was the same for everyone, but there was a pandemic. Nobody quite knew what was happening. Nobody knew how long it was going to last. Nobody knew when fans were going to be back. We didn't quite know what the market was going to be like, etc., etc. So, you know, it was crazy and chaotic, and in the middle of it, we sacked our head of football, you know. So there was a lot of reasons as to why last summer, not saying you write it off, because I think you have to look back on it and learn some lessons, which I hope we do. But this summer, with the backing of the board, clearly, with time to assess the squad that we have at the moment, to make a proper, genuine, coherent recruitment plan / strategy, like, there's no hiding place anymore. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do and how they do it.
I agree completely, and that's a bit of a theme. We talked about, you know, what does not having European football do to our season next year, and having no hiding place was one of the conclusions we came to. You know, ultimately there'll be a lot of scrutiny on our performance in the Premier League, and I think consequently there'll also be a lot of scrutiny on our transfer business. Edu and Arteta have been here long enough. This is not a... You know, and I know that the excuse of it being a tournament window will come up for sure, but there are, they have had time to plan for this eventuality, and they will be judged on it. And I think, you know, there've been always little caveats in the past of kind of, well, is it Edu or Raul leading it? Or, you know, what's Arteta's saying in his head coach?
Now we know. It's clear,
isn't
it? Now
we know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we know. And so the pressure is on. I mean, the pressure's on from us, from the fans, but going back to our point about Abramovich and Chelsea and winning culture, is the pressure on from the top? That's what we have to hope is there. And if anything might provide that, I guess all the unrest and the uncertainty and the underperformance may, but I'm less confident.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, that's all to come throughout the summer, and no doubt we'll be talking about all kinds of transfer business and rumours and stories and all of it, anyway, between now and the start of the season. The window opens on June the 9th, so it's open quite early. Normally, it's sort of the end of June, isn't it? But they've opened it up a bit early, so...
Yeah,
okay. Well, look, let's leave it there for part one. We've got plenty of questions, a lot of them about transfers as well, so we'll deal with those in part two right after this.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. Would you like to go first?
Oh, thank you, Andrew.
That's
I
okay.
Will.
Yeah, good.
This is from James O'Connor at Twitter. He's at JOConnor10 on Twitter. And he says, with Saka in the provisional England squad, is it better for him to go, continue his growth development and most likely increase his value? Or is it better for him to miss out, fully rest up, recover and go again for us next season? And then he says, I prefer the latter option.
So he wants him to rest, basically. I think it's probably better if he were to be part of the England squad for the Euros and to play.
Why do you think that?
I think, like, I can see selfishly, rest him, wrap him in cotton wool or in bubble wrap or whatever, protect him throughout the summer, care for him, rub his aching muscles tenderly with oil and make him come back safe and, you know, fully rested, etc., etc. But I think we're looking at a young player who is potentially the best thing to come out of our academy in how long? I don't know. Long time.
Sometime.
And I think it would be to his benefit as a player if he were part of, you know, if he was good enough to go and play for England and be part of the England squad in the Euros, and if he played and experienced that, is that not something that, despite the worry about short-term rest, is that not something which stands him in good stead, you know, helps his development, grows his confidence and belief and his stature in the game, etc., etc.?
Yeah, I see that. I mean, selfishly, as a Englishman who's going to be watching the Euros, I would like him to be there. You know, I think it gives me a kind of point of reference in the tournament. And to be honest, it's not a tournament awash with Arsenal.
Well,
players.
Yeah, the fat winger, who's at the fat winger on Twitter.
I thought you were talking about someone that plays for us. I was like, who does he mean? Yeah,
which one is that?
Because the fat winger's not going. I was like, Andreas Schwaben doesn't play for us anymore, Anne.
Anyway, he said Arsenal at the Euros used to take it for granted that there were at least 10 or 12 Arsenal players playing regularly for their national sides back in the day. Now it's a bit disappointing to see such a dismal presence at the Euros. I think there's only 4 Arsenal players going to be there. Tierney,
yeah.
Xhaka, Leno, who's number 2.
Probably not going to play, yeah.
And maybe Saka? Is there one more?
I'm just having a quick think. I mean, Saka, a lot of people anticipate him to be part of the cut tomorrow, that he won't go with the full squad, which, you know, seems crazy to us who watch him every week. But there you go. I'm just flicking through the squad now. Obviously, Lacazette isn't there. Ceballos isn't there.
Odegaard would be the only one, but he's not really our player per se.
No, maybe that is the other one, though. I can't see another name. Cedric didn't make the squad. Bellerin didn't make the squad. Well, Cedric briefly experienced an international renaissance earlier this season. I don't know if you remember, Andrew.
I do.
The height of Cedric mania. But it didn't. It wasn't to last.
No. Sad.
Are Iceland in it? Could it be old Rinnarsson sneaking in?
Don't know.
Don't know. Bad, isn't it, that we don't know?
Yeah.
But either
it
way,
also says something, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, it's not a ton of players. I mean, that just says about sort of where we sit, doesn't it, in Premier League football. I mean, it's not that many, but for a club that finished eighth, it's probably about right. We also have a few South Americans these days. Maybe that, you know, and some African players. We've all talked about the problems of that we might face with AFCON next year. So that eats into our eligible contingent, you know. But there's a few young players, particularly young English players, who you'd think would have a chance of getting in squads for future tournaments. Smith Rowe, Saka, of course. Who knows, maybe Joe Willock. So maybe that will get arrested, that decline in kind of international players. But it is an odd one. I think it will affect my enjoyment of the Euros. Don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I always like to see Arsenal players playing. You know, it does give you that little bit of extra interest in in the games. I suppose we'll be looking at pretty much every player who plays well.
We should sign him.
We see that guy who did that thing. We're going to sign him. That's what's going to happen. You're absolutely sure Twitter, Arsenal Twitter, is going to be full of X player does a thing in a game in the Euros, and it's like within, I would say, minutes, there'll be an article somewhere on one of those transfer websites or what have you, linking him with us. But that's, in part because we can all see we need to improve, and, players who can do good things are valuable to us. So, yeah. So you think Saka's going to miss out?
Yeah, I do. He wouldn't for me, but I think in the sort of left back area, there's Luke Shaw, who apparently has had a very good season. They're going to play with wing backs, probably England.
Mm.
There's Ben Chilwell, who obviously is, played for Chelsea. They've won the Champions League. And I think in attack, I think the emergence of people like, I think Mason Greenwood is a bit of a threat to him in terms of his goal scoring ability. I think Jadon Sancho has got a chance of making it when it was assumed he was going to be injured. There's just a few names. I mean, I saw an article where like 10 journalists picked their players to be cut from Southgate's 33-man squad, and all 10 picked Saka, which, I don't know, made me feel like the writing is on the wall a little bit. It does seem mad, doesn't it, given quite how good he's been, but...
Yeah, but look,
he's actually quite a talented generation of England players, believe it or not.
There are, in fairness. I mean, there are some good ones there, but, look, if it works out for him that he gets the summer off and he can rest and come back and prove Gareth Southgate wrong, maybe there's some motivation in that for him as well. So,
true.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of... I'm not hugely worried about either outcome with Saka. I think if he goes... yes, he'll be part of the training camp when he could be resting, but I think that will be a really good experience for him. If he doesn't, he can rest. I mean, ultimately, he's not going to be playing European fixtures as well next week, so I think the load is going to be slightly lightened on him next season.
Yeah, next season, not next week. I don't think there's any European games next week, as far as I'm aware, unless there's some other trophy
conference that we qualified for.
Oh, God. Okay. Where is my question gone? I just clicked off it there. Okay, it comes from Andre Guillory, who's at and_Guillory. I've wrecked his name. I'm sorry about that. Anyway, he says, do you think there's a worry that if we wait too long for Madrid's answer on Odegaard, we risk losing out on both him and Buendia, considering the amount of interest in the latter?
Yes, I think that is a risk because, Aston Villa are pretty serious about their interest in Buendia, from what I gather. And, they... last summer they did some pretty good business, pretty effectively, pretty swiftly. They don't tend to hang around. The Odegaard situation is obviously complicated by what's happened with Zinedine Zidane. Him stepping down from Madrid creates a bit of uncertainty, I think. I think if he was still there, our chances of getting Odegaard would have been slightly better. Who knows who will come in and what their vision for the team will be. But Madrid is one of those clubs a bit like Chelsea where you feel like, not the owner, but the president, has a certain degree of sway. That if he said, well, I want Odegaard to be part of the future of the team at the interview process for the new manager, then that manager's probably going to go along with it.
Yeah, but I mean, the president of Real Madrid could, and probably more likely would say, I want Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, so, that's true.
In order to fund that, given that we're broke... we can sell Martin Odegaard for as much as we can get from Arsenal.
Yeah, now that the Super League idea has gone down the drain, there's a bit of a fire sale potentially. That is true. I mean, Perez does like Odegaard, apparently, but you're
right
to say...
he would like Mbappe more, wouldn't he?
He would love Mbappe more. That would be kind of the jewel in the crown. And so, yeah, maybe we will be the beneficiaries there. I don't think that's one that's going to get resolved super swiftly, though. I think we might have to wait a little bit And that presents a problem with Buendia. You know, do you press the button to get the guy you think? I mean, if Arsenal want Buendia, the player's going to want to do that, right? It's a great move for him from Norwich. And it's a better move. Well, I think it's a better move than Aston Villa. We have to believe that it is, right?
I think, yeah, still in terms of stature and reputation. London. Yeah, there is that. And yeah, but look, again, maybe that's a sign of where we are, that we're competing with Aston Villa for players. And that's not to be disrespectful of Aston Villa or anything like it, but...
It is interesting, isn't it, how prices work in football? I mean, someone tweeted us the other day saying, I find it kind of amazing that we're talking about similar prices for Joe Willock and Martin Odegaard. And it is curious that a player coming up from the Championship, say, would potentially command the same kind of fee as an international captain who plays for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
It is an odd thing.
Well, maybe the Odegaard price is way off the mark. Maybe what Real Madrid want for Martin Odegaard is much more than Norwich want for Buendia.
Yeah, maybe we're filling the blank with our optimism.
Yeah. This is the reverse of the... If we just sell Ainsley Maitland-Niles for 60 million, yeah, maybe this is the reverse of that. And then we buy Martin Odegaard for £2.50.
For 12 million. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe. Mm. Maybe we're projecting that a bit, hopefully. What's your gut feeling on Odegaard?
Again, it's so hard to say because it really depends on what the new manager of Real Madrid wants. But they have just extended Modric, haven't they? For another year.
For a year, yeah.
So maybe that's a sign that they're, you know, kicking that particular can down the road. Mm. Would you take him on loan again? Like, let's say there was a loan fee of 6 million, 7 million. Would you take him on loan for a year? And then you're, you know, maybe with an option.
Oh, with an option, I think I would, yeah. With an option, I think I would. Would you?
I think so, yeah. I want us to move away from loans.
I know you don't like the loans, so I thought you were going to say no.
But I think I would if there was an option. You know, going back to what you were saying the other day, you know, about being lucky to have had the, you know, the test drive.
The more information you can get before you actually spend the money.
Yeah. You know, so we've had a four-month loan spell, which was, you know, good, but affected by injury. Maybe if you get another whole season, you're much more rounded. I think Arteta is convinced anyway. You know, if they're moving that strongly for him, I think Arteta is convinced that he can be a player, you know, for this football club on a permanent basis. So it'll be just interesting to see how it might be structured, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting. Mm. Okay. What about this question from Rian Vacher? Since we're only going to be playing 38 games plus cups, how likely is it that the likes of Balogun, Aziz, John Jules, etc. stay with the club rather than get loaned out? And then he adds, feel like someone like Balogun would benefit from minutes more than just being on the fringes of the squad.
Yeah, I mean, that is the one downside of not being in the Europa League, mm-hmm. is that we don't have the minutes to give to young players.
Yeah.
You could look at that in a different way as well and say, if we were in the Champions League, could we give those players minutes given the caliber of the opposition that we'd be playing?
No. Yeah.
So it's sort of this fringe benefit of being mediocre, right? In that you can use the Europa League group stages to blood young players because the teams you're playing aren't as high level as they are, you know, in the Champions League. So I think those players... Like, I don't really see that John Jules is going to make it. Aziz is obviously somebody they think very highly of. Balogun as well, they think very highly of. Tied him down to a new deal. So there's some display of faith in him. But I think the point is valid that, like, when is he going to play? Like 20 minutes here or there? Do you bring him on in a game when you're 3-0 up and you feel safe? Is 2-0 safe enough? 2-0 up with 14 minutes to go?
Can you bring on Balogun?
Yeah, you know, that kind of thing. So it wouldn't surprise me if those guys went on loan.
I think without Europa League football, there's quite a good case to send them out. Mm. I mean, as much as we, you know, have very mixed feelings about the Europa League, I think we do have to look at the emergence of people like Martinelli, Saka, to an extent, Joe Willock. I mean, they really did come through that competition and made great strides in it. And I think we're grateful to that opportunity for providing them a platform to show what they could do and then later push on and start playing in more serious competitions for us. You know, it's been a great kind of breeding ground for Arsenal talent, and that won't be available to us next year. I mean, I imagine we'll, you know, use the League Cup as far as we can in that way. We'll have an extra round. We'll enter at the second round in the League Cup for the first time in a very, very long time.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
I know. Isn't that weird?
That's ridiculous. Anyway, go on, yeah.
But yeah, so potentially that's another fixture to offer the likes of Aziz and Balogun.
I mean, does maybe with Balogun, it depends on what happens to Lacazette and to Nketiah, you know? So it might well be a case that Balogun is, there's a place in the squad for him as one of the centre forwards, because it looks like Eddie will go if they're not going to give him a new deal. I really think Lacazette should go because, you know, we cannot afford to let players leave for free. Again, going back to our question about resources and using them, even if you only get 20 million for Lacazette, it's 20 million you didn't have. I think that would be actually quite a decent fee for him, all things considered. So, you know, that's the kind of decision-making that will impact Balogun's future, because he could then understudy, you have Aubameyang as your starting striker with Martinelli and Balogun providing the backup, if you like.
Yeah. True. There could be a case. There could be a case for that.
Is there not also a case for a signing? If you're letting Lacazette and Nketiah go, somebody who maybe has a bit more experience.
Yeah, exactly. I mentioned that in my piece the other day. It's a position that is not, you know, top of the Arsenal list right now, but if sales happen, could come into it. I think if Balogun's third choice centre forward, I think you should loan him out. Like, if there's someone in between him and Aubameyang, even if that's Gabriel Martinelli, I think you should probably loan him out. I just think he could benefit so much from senior football that's the side of that I'd come down on.
Mm.
And you can always look at it again in January if you want. But I just think it'd be a shame for him to not finally get... Because, you know, he probably could have had more minutes this season, but the uncertainty over his contract, that affected things. The presence of Nketiah affected things. Mm.
He needs to play, yeah.
Yeah, I really do think that. Aziz is a bit trickier. Who knows what our midfield situation is going to be like coming into next season. I think if he gets a good opportunity to go out and play, I think he should take it. I don't think we should underestimate how valuable those loan spells can be.
Yeah.
Look at Joe Willock.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, while you've just mentioned Joe Willock,
yes,
I have a couple of questions here. One from Joe, who's at Red and White 11. He said, after reading the Willock article on the site and seeing the stats, would it make sense to give him a shot at striker? He seems to fit the bill on what Arteta wants from his striker more than a midfielder in the system we play. And Chris, who's at Chris, says, could we sell Lacazette and make Willock a striker? Joe Willock used, if Arteta ever wants to play the false nine again. Is he the falsest of false nines?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I had an interesting conversation with Tom Werwell about this, and he was telling me how statistically there are kind of similarities in Joe Willock's profile to that of Ilkay Gundogan, in terms of how often he gets into the box, the amount of touches he takes in the box, the XG he produces. I've not seen the data visualization piece on Arsblog News, so I don't know if that covers similar territory.
But it does a bit, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's tempting. I have to say, I don't look at Joe Willock and think centre forward. I think what makes him so dangerous really is that ability he has to kind of arrive in the box and the timing of those runs. I actually think I'd be more inclined to sort of see him as like a second striker, like a kind of shadow striker, someone playing off a front man, than I would as the front man. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't think he would be a striker or should be repurposed as a striker. But I think one of the things that Mikel Arteta said last year was that he wanted to play a 4-3-3, I think. Mm-hmm. And wasn't it, there was a little bit of controversy is the wrong word, but he said something along the lines of you need the specificity of player to be able to do that, right? And we don't have those players. And, you know, maybe it was seen as counterproductive to sort of say publicly that you don't have the players to play the kind of football that you want to play, which I understand. But, you know, is Joe Willock not a perfect player for a midfield three?
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, for all the talk of how he doesn't quite fit Arteta's system right now, what if the system changed?
Whoa, mind-blowing.
I'm not saying it will, but, you know, maybe that could be part of how you assemble your midfield for next season. If you're letting Guendouzi go, if you're letting Torreira go, if Xhaka goes, you obviously have to make a signing, but you need more than that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a possibility, isn't it?
Yeah.
Increasingly, I find it hard to see Joe Willock at Newcastle next season. I'm just not convinced they've got the financial capacity to make us an offer, you know, we feel inclined to take. I think he'll be at Arsenal or elsewhere within the Premier League. Newcastle fans won't appreciate me saying that, but that's just my sense of it. What about this? I don't know if we've done this, but Thomas Telly Junkies, who's at Thomas Wilshire, no relation presumably, says, unpopular. We had Kolasinac and Ainsley Maitland-Niles out on loan for the end of the season. Nonetheless, I feel either of them would have played important games in the last weeks. Was it a mistake we are not willing to admit?
Well, this goes back to the Kieran Tierney thing that we talked about a bit earlier, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was letting Kolasinac go a mistake? No. No. Absolutely not. I think he was one of the characters that needed to go. I mean, we got shot pretty quickly. So, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, could he have played at left back? I remember Ainsley having a couple of games there and it not going particularly well. You know, we did have, sorry to keep banging this drum, but we did have an almost perfect solution to Tierney's absence in the second half of the season in the shape of Bukayo Saka. But we did something different. So I don't think it was a mistake necessarily to let either of them go. If you're going to bring in a left back and you want a very specific left back, you know, you're not going to bring in the old player. We had apparently Cedric who could reportedly play left back but didn't.
Rumors suggest.
You know, he did have a couple of games there, made a couple of mistakes, and then never played there again. So I don't think that was the mistake. I still think the mistake was playing Xhaka there. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there you go.
There we go.
There we go. That's what I think of that. Do you think differently? Or?
I mean, I think Kolasinac could be so bad at times that I'm not sure how helpful that would have been. I guess the only thing he would have done, or Maitland-Niles might have done, would have been enable us to keep Xhaka in midfield.
Mm.
I think moving Kolasinac on was, and maybe Maitland-Niles, was about more than what positions they could play.
Mm.
I think it was about having players who Arteta felt were right for the club and committed to the project in the second half of the season. And I don't think he would undo those decisions if he could. So,
yeah,
I think it's difficult to kind of call them a mistake, even if I do accept the point that from a tactical perspective, they might have solved the problem.
Okay. Matt Knight, who's at Mr._Matt_Knight, says, with funds limited, which position would you go big on at the expense of another position not being added to? For example, if we can get Bissouma for 50 million, but it means Chambers and Cedric are our right backs, are you doing it? P.S. Backup left back must be signed.
Well, I think that's a good question because Arsenal are in this position where they probably do have to prioritise. It's really interesting. Last summer, they made a call ultimately, didn't they? They went for Thomas Partey rather than a creative midfield player in the summer window. They couldn't ultimately do both. And I think you can... I think on the one hand, it's good that they didn't sort of just panic buy and bring someone in who they weren't sure about. On the other hand, not having that creative link between midfield and attack deeply hurt the first half of Arsenal's season. Mm. So, yeah, you can debate that one. I think partly because of that, if I did have to prioritise a position in this window, I think it would be the number 10 for me. I just think... that is such a clear, even with the emergence of Smith Rowe, I think a missing piece in the jigsaw. And I would like to see that fixed. And if it means we have to kind of make do and mend at fullback a little bit, then I guess, while it's not, I don't consider that ideal, I guess so be it. Mm. I think we need that player.
I was interested in your piece to note that Callum Chambers has got an option of another year on his contract.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea when that has to be activated? Because those kind of clauses usually have a time on them, don't they? That you have to activate
that's
it by...
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know, to be frank. And I know that... All I do know is that it's not like Chambers has been in contract talks with the club. I think the club haven't addressed the possibility of a new deal yet, one that would take him beyond that option.
Mm.
But I think the fact they have that option, maybe it gives them a little bit more flexibility in their planning in that position than we thought. It did look like either they've got to give him a 5-year deal or they've got to sell him kind of thing. Whereas now they can, if they want, they can push that decision back by 12 months. I don't know, what position would you prioritise at the expense of others?
I'm sort of with you on the creative midfielder. But I do think that central midfield... Like, I'm cautious and wouldn't want to overburden Emile Smith-Rowe. Which
but
is why I think
exist.
He does exist and I think he can do that. And I think if he plays more regularly, he will develop as a player, and that's obviously beneficial. But, you know, like we said last week, you've got to be building a squad, not just for next season where you don't have European games. You've got to be building a squad with European football the following season in mind. Because if we don't have European football, not next season, but the season after this one, well, you know, everyone's getting fired.
Yeah, I suspect that's true.
You know, so because that will be a massive, massive failure on the part of you know, the manager, the technical director, the recruitment, all of it. You know, so everyone's getting fired if we don't get into Europe next season in some degree or another. And I don't mean the Europa Conference League either. I think if we end up in that next season, everyone should be fired as well. So I do think, you know, just having a bit more depth in that creative midfielder position is important. So your Odegaard or Buendia, whoever that might be. But
with Suarez having gone home, we are very light in the sort of deeper midfield positions too, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. So I do think a central midfield... Would I take a really good central midfield player at the expense of... If it meant, for example, Callum Chambers was playing right back next season, I would. I think so. Yes, if I had to make that sacrifice, I mean, we're dealing in podcasting hypotheticals here, so don't go crazy, everyone. But yeah, I think.
Yeah, I'd prioritize probably the creative midfielder and the central midfielder over right back. I tend to agree with the question that having learnt what we did last season, some sort of left back in the squad, I think is pretty important.
Yes. Yeah.
I know. I mean, we still have Saka, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, I think that was the solution for this season and for the circumstances in which we found ourselves in, that we didn't have a natural left back. And the most obvious answer was that I don't think it should be the solution for next season. Let me be clear about that. You know, we've got time, 3 months now to source a left back. Do you have any indication of who we're looking at? I got a snippet of information about the guy at Hibs, Josh Doig.
Yeah, I know that he is on the list, but from what I understand, he's not sort of number one or number two.
Hibs,
so
Hibs looking for £5 million, okay, plus a percentage of a sell-on percentage in the deal.
Yeah, I mean, if Arsenal can get themselves someone who they think is a decent back up to Tierney for £5 million, it's a deal worth doing, right? But from what I know, although they do like him, I don't think he's the one. I don't know who it is at this point, but I think that is a position that they need to attend to. I mean, it's interesting, like left back and number 10, they're both kind of hangovers from previous windows, really. I mean, last summer we were trying for the number 10, we ended up doing a loan in January. We'd probably still need that permanent signing, and left back, you know, we could have attended that to that in January. We chose not to. I sort of think we have to now, to justify the logic in that, really. Right. I'll have a look in my little folder of questions. What have we got here? We've talked about that. Yeah, it was no, CIA said, what do the rumours of us looking for another centre-back say about the club's evaluation of Saliba? Yeah. We've done that. MJ Strianese, if you could buy one player from each of the relegated clubs, who would you choose? Play this game every year, don't we?
We do. I have to go and look at the squads of the...
Okay, I'll see if I can make a little head start. Sheffield United, a bottom. The one everyone's talking about there is Sanderberg. I mean, he's not set the world alight, has he, in Sheffield? But he is a central midfield player. He is tall, he is strong, he can pass. Given our lack of depth in that area, I guess he's the obvious choice.
Not Phil Jagielka, who could, play in goal as well.
I am interested in their... They've got a very young centre-forward. Not Rian Brewster, who they bought from Liverpool at great expense. Antoine Hackford is his name.
Right.
He is 16 years... He became their youngest ever Premier League player at 16 years of age this season.
Mm.
And he's one of those guys who it's like... a bit of a Walcott situation. Everyone's talking about him in, you know, youth levels of football.
Right.
So, you know, I might choose him. But if I was thinking about first team, immediate improvement, I guess it's got to be Sanderberg.
Yeah, there's nobody else that really stands out for me there, to be honest. So I'll go with that one. West Brom, I would take Pereira, Matheus Pereira.
Yeah, he's a nice player.
He is good. Had a good season, didn't he?
Yeah,
I've 12 seen goals, really well. Quite a few assists, very good set piece delivery. So, you know, I would go for him.
Buendia season when he was in the Premier League, you know, went down but made a really good impression. How old is he, Matheus Pereira? He's a Brazilian, 25.
25.
Okay.
Good age,
good player. Yeah, I like him. I agree with you on that. And lastly, Fulham.
Fulham.
I actually know my answer to this, but I can't remember the guy's name. I'm going to have to look him up now.
The midfielder.
Well, yeah, there is one midfielder I'm thinking of. I think it's Anguissa.
Yeah.
He is a nightmare to play against. He's what when I was looking at sort of, I was doing some sort of stats research on a piece, and in terms of like, you know, actual tackles and contests for the ball and duels and that sort of thing, he's sort of way out in front of a lot of people. He's very, very physical. You know, not the most accomplished player, but very dynamic. So I'd probably go for him.
Okay. I'll follow you.
Although...
Go on. Are you
Who else would you say?
Well, I mean, it'd be hard to turn down Mitrovic, wouldn't it? You know.
Of course.
Who else would I go for? I don't know. I don't know. None of those names are really singing to me, you know?
Yeah. It's there's not such clear names as there have been in previous seasons.
There's a guy at Fulham called Sylvester Jasper, I'd probably just sign
for
his name.
Maybe him on the name.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Ademola Lookman's quite a good player. Does he even belong to them or is he on loan? I can't remember.
Don't know. Don't they have
Mitrovic,
a centre half?
The ultimate
that we're,
plan yeah. B.
Don't they have a centre half that we're apparently after as well?
Oh, do they? I don't know about that.
Right.
Maybe. I'm going to stick with Anguissa. But right. I'm sure the listeners will have ideas. They always do. They always tell us what, you know, what we should have said.
Yes. They know better than us anyway. So
they do. They really do.
Okay. Let's do this one. It's been asked a couple of times in the Discord. Dazzy Pepper says, time for the transfer predictions? That was a question. What will this summer's total spend and net spend be? And Nick says, how much money will we spend on buying footballers from other teams? How much money will we make from selling our footballers to other teams? I think this is going to be the hardest transfer money prediction question ever. Ever.
And we're usually bad at it anyway.
Well, you know what happens, though? We do them.
And we forget.
We forget completely about them, and then the transfer window closes, and we never go back and say, hey, were we right? So this time, James, this time...
I feel like we've made these promises before.
I know. I'm just saying it. I am going to keep a spreadsheet of what we think in a place where I can find it again, not on a bit of paper that
on
I put
computer.
To one side, on my computer. I am going to save it, James. In the cloud.
Oh my God. It will live forever.
McLeod.
The time capsule.
Yes. Connor McLeod.
Okay.
So, Andrew. And that's
right,
me.
Well, I'll be doing my workings for this live, by the way. I haven't thought this through.
That doesn't matter.
Okay.
Okay. Spending. Selling. Okay. So. You've got to think about how much we are going to spend.
Yeah.
And how much we are going to sell. How much? What do you think is the easiest one to figure out?
I think sell is the easier.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. You going to work it out?
Yeah. I think I'm working it out live. I'll talk you through it as I'm doing it.
Do it live! We'll do it live!
Okay, I think we'll sell Hector Bellerin for 15 million.
Okay.
I think we'll sell Guendouzi, potentially to Marseille.
Yeah, this week
for,
maybe.
For approx 10 mil.
Yeah, I saw 12 million euro fee being mentioned today, so...
Well, that would be decent. I'd take that, given... everything that's gone on. I think we're going to fail to sell Lucas Torreira. I think he'll end up on loan or something like that.
Right.
Just a hunch.
Okay.
I just don't know if there'll be a buyer, but hopefully I'm wrong.
Who else are we selling, James?
Are we selling Granit Xhaka? Possibly. The names are Xhaka, Lacazette. I think Willian will go, but I don't think we'll get any money. That's for sure. I'm going to say we'll sell Eddie Nketiah.
Mm-hmm. How much?
For 17 million.
You're supposed to take this seriously, James.
I think it's possible.
£17 million for Eddie Nketiah, really?
People are talking about £40 million for Joe Willock. He's the highest goal scorer in England under 21 history. What did Sheffield United buy Brewster for?
£23 million. But you, Liverpool sold him. They're good at that.
But what I'm saying is we should be aim. I mean, we're not going to get £23 million. But
no, we're not. I think.
Well, listen, if I'm wrong, it's good for you. You want me to be wrong.
I don't.
What do
want
you think
you
we'll get,
wrong.
Freddie Nketiah?
I think we'll get nine, maybe eight or nine for Eddie.
Are we doing this together or separately?
I'm sort of listening to you and then deciding what's going to
okay,
happen.
Okay. So who else are we going to sell? Are we going to sell?
Are we selling Xhaka? Have you decided we're selling Xhaka or not? Come on, make your mind up. Mikel Arteta
needs
to know. All
right, I'll say we'll sell Xhaka. 20 million.
Okay. So far, you've got 25 million, 45 million, plus 17 million for Eddie Nketiah.
Yeah.
That's £62 million you've generated so far.
I'm dangerously close to one of those Twitter threads, aren't I, about how we remodel the squad.
So close.
I'm just looking at the squad now, trying to figure out if anyone else is going to go.
Maitland-Niles?
Yeah.
How much? For England international, Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
£15 million?
Okay.
It feels ambitious too, but...
I mean, it feels a lot more realistic than £17 million for Eddie.
To strikers me, anyway. Cost more. Strikers cost more.
Yeah.
What do you think Eddie would cost? Did you just say
this? I said about
nine.
I think if we get 8 to 10 million, we'd take it.
Really?
Hmm.
Well, I think there'll be more money for him, but
year left 20. On his deal.
Mavropanos will sell.
Mavropanos. How much are you selling Mavropanos for?
7 million.
Okay. So you've 15 million, so 62 million, 77 million. You've added another 7 with Mavropanos, so that's 83 million so far.
I mean...
You need to be the fucking technical director. That's what this is telling
me. And I haven't sold Torreira, I haven't sold Joe Willock, I haven't sold Lacazette, I haven't sold Saliba.
See, that was my one. I think Saliba could be a...
I'm going to call it there. I don't know if they're the right players, but I can't imagine we're going to get more money than that. I'm going to say that's my number.
83 million is your number.
Right. I mean, that's loads. We're not getting that, but anyway. What's yours then?
Okay, I got to go through who I think we're going to sell.
Yeah, let's hear names and numbers.
Okay. Bellerin. 12 million.
Okay. Eddie Nketiah, 4p.
Cedric, 3 million.
Okay. Bite your hand off.
Yeah. Will I do it? Saliba, 20 million.
Okay. Someone had to do it.
Someone had to. Xhaka, 20 million.
Okay.
Lacazette, 12 million.
Okay.
Reece Nelson.
Forgot about him. Just for genuinely completely even forgot he was alive.
7 million. Eddie. I said 8. I feel less ambitious about that now.
Really? Now you're there, you're like, that's too much.
I think $5 million for Reece Nelson and $6 million for Eddie.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, looking at the market through my glasses of realism.
You might be right.
Guendouzi, obviously, we got the fee of, it's around $10 million.
And Saka, $60 million.
Saka, $90 million to Manchester City.
Yeah.
So I think we're generating 12 and 3, 15, 65. With Lacazette, Lacazette, that's 77, 87, and 11. 87 and 11.
So you ended up with 98 million, despite your realism.
Yeah, but I threw in Saliba for 20 million. You know, you didn't go there.
That's true. I bottled that.
Yeah. So,
right. Incoming.
Okay, incoming.
Incoming.
Watch out.
So these are the things I think we'll definitely do. We'll definitely do a 10. We'll definitely do a keeper, in my opinion. I think we'll definitely do a central midfielder if we've sold Xhaka. And I think we'll definitely do a left back. I think they're the only ones I can say with absolute certainty that I think we'll do. So let's say, fucking hell. It's not easy, this.
It's not, no.
I don't think we're getting a number 10 realistically for less than about 40 million. I just don't think we are.
Well, if it's Buendia, it's around 30. That's the numbers doing the rounds today from Norwich, that both Max Aarons and Emi Buendia are available for around or as 30 million as a starting point, which means, you know, they'll take around that.
Yeah, I've heard higher, but maybe that's... I'm going to say... All right, I'm going to say we can get one for 30. Madrid are in a terrible mess financially.
They need Mbappe. They need that sweet, sweet
I think we should be able
Mbappe.
To sign Odegaard for the same price we sell Eddie Nketiah for. That's this is according to my transfer plan. That's what we need. Goalkeeper. I think we'll spend a fair amount on a goalkeeper. I'm going to say I think it'll be 12 million. At least. Which some would query.
They
isn't
would.
That wise? Central midfield. If Shaka's going out, you need someone decent in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say we'll spend 25 million.
Who are you getting for 25 million? You reckon you could get a Bissouma for 25 million?
I reckon you could have a go. I reckon they'd probably want more like 30, 35. But I reckon there's got to be a player out there for 25 million. If you sold Xhaka at 20, there's got to be someone out there.
Yeah.
If not, then maybe we shouldn't have sacked all those scouts. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then left back, I'm going to say like 6 million.
6 million. So let me just double check this. 12 million for a goalkeeper, 25 million for a central midfielder. You went with 30 million for the ACM.
Yeah, can I up that
to
35.
So we've got my brain is 60 25 million.
25 plus 35 is 60 plus 18, 78.
78.
So
million.
I've got us in profit. That'll go down well, I imagine.
Mm.
With the Kroenke out brigade. If we turn a nice profit in the summer transfer window.
Net spend of minus whatever it is. You've made a 5 million. Yeah, net spend of minus 5 million.
That doesn't sound right, does it?
No. It sounds like we're talking out of our arses, in fairness, which is, you know, pretty much what we're doing here. But, yeah. I think it's because there's so many players we could sell and we're probably not going
to
sell.
It's impossible to call. Yeah, exactly.
I'm like selling everyone I want to sell. Saliba's not included in that before people go crazy.
And just to clarify, so in my numbers, I didn't sell people like Lacazette. I didn't sell Saliba. I didn't sell
Reece Nelson.
Elneny, Reece Nelson.
Mm.
But I did, and then when I bought, I didn't buy a right back. I stuck with Chambers and Cedric, and I was maybe conservative in my prices for the central midfielder and number 10. Maybe I should increase those. Can I please change it?
Yes, of course.
Can I go to 40 million for my number 10?
Yeah.
I'll stick with... No, I'm going to raise the goalkeeper to 15 as well.
Okay.
Now I know I've got this budget to play with.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got... and then I'll have 6 million left back and I'll go 30 million central midfield. So my final numbers are 70, 85, 91. So KSE do care. They spent how much?
What was your... See, I've forgotten already. 83. They spent
£8 million.
£8 million on rebuilding.
They care. Do you?
Okay.
Do we? Right, okay. A net spend of £8 million. Surely the Premier League title right. will be ours.
Okay. Right back. I think we're going to buy a player at right back.
That would be nice.
Yeah. So I'm going to go 23 million. I don't know who it is, though.
Very specific, though. I like that.
Mm. Goalkeeper. See, we didn't sell Bernd Leno either. What if we sell Bernd Leno? Anyway, goalkeeper, I reckon it's going to be less than you predict. So I'm going to go with like 7 million for a goalkeeper.
Okay.
Oh, no. Goalkeeper's going to have to be homegrown, isn't he?
Mm,
that is one issue. one of the considerations. Hmm. I'll have to raise that if it's going to be a homegrown player.
Okay. The Nketiah tax.
Yeah. 12 million. Central midfielder, 30 million. Yeah, attacking midfielder, 40 million.
Yeah, with you on those.
And a left back,
400 million?
I think it's either going to be, and it should be probably cheap. So it's either going to be
six.
An old free transfer, or it's going to be a young up-and-comer, a whippersnapper who maybe hasn't established himself somewhere yet. So I will go 5 million on the right, on the left back. So that gives me a total of what? 23, 70, 83, and 12, 95, and 5, 100 million. 100 million, bang on, I think.
Wow.
If my maths are right, which they might be, but they might not be.
I mean, what I will say is, I don't believe... Like, I'm happy to stick with those as my numbers because there has been a logic to getting to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if I step back, I think that's right. I think we will end up in a deficit. I think we will have spent more than 5 million or something this summer. But maybe that's crazy. Maybe we're right. Maybe it will be X million in, X million out.
Maybe. It could be just a crazy summer. Who knows? Anyway, it's just fun podcast exercise. Nobody should take this in any way seriously.
No. I just don't want anyone, I don't want to see any aggregated Twitter accounts saying Arseblog and Gunnerblog confirm
Arsenal to will spend 100 million.
100 million war chest in this transfer window.
I'm sure that will happen within minutes of this podcast going out. So there you go. Anyway, we better call it a day, leave it there. Although we did have Jack Porter, who said, to fill the void until next season, are we going to get any more Arseblog versus Gunnerblog FIFA matches? We should probably do one of those during the summer,
sure,
shouldn't we?
There will be one. Yeah, we'll
do that. That's for sure.
I'll play Eddie Nketiah up front and show you what he's really worth.
£17 million Eddie Nketiah bangs in the goals for James, I'm sure.
If we get £17 million for Eddie Nketiah,
I will buy you a prize.
Okay.
I'll get you a prize of some kind. If
the
we
value
get some,
of £17 million.
Well, it might mention the monetary value of the incident, if not necessarily be worth that itself.
Right. Okay.
But I'll stand by that, and I will, I will make sure that I mark your correctness on that particular issue.
Okay, I look forward to it.
All right, folks. Thanks as ever for being here. If you've made it this far, God bless you. It's been a challenge for us, and I'm sure it's been a challenge for you. So we will have a regular Arsecast on Friday. We'll maybe do something midweek on Patreon for transfers or something like that. I'll have a think about it. I've had this week just to kind of not think about anything, so now I have to start thinking about stuff again, which is...
what a pain.
I know. Okay, well, look, we will leave it there. As ever, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.